From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made this morning in a decision announced by the United States Supreme Court. In that 5-4 decision, the court decided that states cannot ban same-sex marriage. It's a decision that impacts more than 36 states and millions of Americans. Writing for the majority, Justice Anthony Kennedy wrote the following, quote, "No union is more profound than marriage, for it embodies the highest ideals of love, fidelity, devotion, sacrifice, and family. In forming a marital union, two people become something greater than once they were. It would misunderstand these men and women to say they disrespect the idea of marriage," Justice Kennedy said of the couples challenging state bans on same-sex marriage. And he continued to write the following. Their plea is that they do respect it so deeply that they seek to find its fulfillment for themselves. Their hope is not to be condemned to live in loneliness, excluded from one of civilization's oldest institutions. They ask for equal dignity in the eyes of the law. The Constitution grants them that right. The judgment of the Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit is reversed. That's Anthony Kennedy, writing the majority. That historic decision published this morning by the United States Supreme Court. We're going to talk about this hour, what it means for all of us and what it means going forward with a number of guests, including in studio Denise Spivak. She is the National Director of Membership and External Affairs for CenterLink, the community of LGBT centers. Denise, nice to have you in Rochester. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan. Great to be here.
Also on the line with us is Assemblyman Harry Bronson, who is kind enough on a busy day to stop and join the conversation. And Harry, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Evan. Thank you for having me on.
Assemblyman, what was your reaction when you heard this morning?
You know, Evan, I heard the news from your own Beth Adams this morning, who was interviewing me on a piece of legislation I passed this year. And she got the word and she asked me about it. And my one-word response, overwhelming. Absolutely overwhelming. It is such a joy and with so much pride to now have the United States recognize and respect same-sex marriages.
Assemblyman, for New Yorkers, this mattered less for us, and I say that not as if it didn't matter. Of course, it mattered to Americans, this decision, no matter what side, quote-unquote, you were on. But is there an impact in the state, in your mind, on this decision, considering New York had already passed same-sex marriage?
Well, Evan, 4 years ago and 2 days, around midnight of June 24th, 2011, we took the historic step here in New York State to recognize same-sex marriages. That was a tremendous leap forward for New Yorkers. And it offered them all the rights and responsibilities of any other couple. And that was historic for us. It changed the lives of many, many New Yorkers. This decision may not legally change the lives of those New Yorkers, but emotionally, it does. Because now, not only does the great state of New York recognize us as full citizens, the United States now recognizes us as full citizens.
Listeners, if you want to call the program and join the conversation as we talk about the United States Supreme Court's decision on same-sex marriage, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Denise Spivak, what was your reaction this morning? What did you expect to happen on this?
You know, I think we all were hedging towards the side that we expected it was going to come down in favor. But there is always that possibility. And so I think we were all cautiously optimistic. I think it's just a momentous occasion. I was thrilled to be at a community center, at an LGBT community center, when I heard the news. I think it really... It's such a phenomenal culmination of such hard work that so many people have been doing at local levels, at state levels, at national levels. And so it's just, you know, it's a moment that so many of, I think, of our older citizens never thought they'd see in their lifetime. And so many of us in the LGBT movement just were praying would be that big next step that we needed.
In a moment, we're going to talk to Scott Fearing, the director of the local Gay Alliance, who happens to be down at Rochester City Hall right now as they raise the rainbow flag. They've got a celebration happening there. So Scott's going to book it down here as soon as he can. But I want to ask Denise to kind of explain what it is that you and your organization does, because you happen to be in Rochester today, but where is home for you?
Home for me is Fort Lauderdale, Florida. That's our national headquarters. CenterLink is the National Association of LGBT Community Centers. Best parallel I can say is we're like a chamber of commerce for community centers. We help to provide training and assistance for the leaders of community centers so that they can build strong, sustainable centers and support healthy, vibrant communities.
And there's Scott, just as I mentioned his name, I said he was going to be booking it down here from City Hall. He just walked in the door with a huge smile on your face. So Scott Fearing, as you get comfortable and get that mic up to speed there, take your time. You know Denise. Harry Bronson's on the line with us. You can say hello to Harry as
well. Hello, Mr. Bronson.
Hello, Scott. How are you today?
Well, let's just say I have not stopped smiling in the last 2.5 hours.
I'm with you.
Scott has been doing interviews with all kinds of media today, even those who don't always support the cause that he's been doing, and you still have been not stopped smiling, which is fascinating to me.
You know, that's part of our role as a local community center, is to engage with the local media, get the local community talking, be there to answer the questions that people have.
What was it like down at City Hall just now?
It was a very nice little ceremony. The mayor came out, the deputy mayor was there, and a couple of city council members. We put the flag up over City Hall. It was actually quite a stunning statement on behalf of the city to say, we are celebrating with the LGBT community.
Now, I was just talking to Denise Spivak, who is in studio with us as well. And what brought you to Rochester? Why did you happen to be here on this historic day?
We have a national convention every year, and I was doing an advanced site visit to see if Rochester is a place that we can bring the conference in the coming years.
Did you want to break any news?
I will withhold comment for right now, but I will say that I am really impressed with Rochester. It's a great community, and I think the fact that Scott came from the flag raising at City Hall, it just speaks volumes, because that is not the case with every community around the country.
And this is where I want to talk to all three of our guests right now about an important part of this moment, because certainly there is celebration among gay couples, straight Americans who were rooting on this change, millions of Americans celebrating. But here is just a kind of a bit of caution, and it comes from Slate, and I want to read this. This is the story. One of the headlines on Slate.com is, "The Supreme Court Just Made My Marriage Legal," and it's by Vanessa Vitello Urquhart. And she writes, and in part, the following, quote, "My joy over the decision is real, as is my relief. And still, somehow, I can't quite help wishing that this process had gone differently. Throughout Tennessee and states like it, I know there will be anger and resentment toward the court and all LGBTQ people. The ruling is to be imposed unwillingly on states in which attitudes are changing, but maybe not quite fast enough to have made it unnecessary for the Supreme Court to step in today. If it had been up to me, it wouldn't have gone down that way. The arguments that gay men and lesbians deserve to be treated with dignity under the law would have persuaded ordinary people as swiftly or more than they persuaded judges. And a wave of legislation allowing for same-sex marriages would have made equality by judicial fiat unnecessary." Scott Fearing, I'll start with you. What do you think of that?
It's a great, ponderous question. I think the important thing to realize is that the role of the courts, the role of government, is to protect the minority from the tyranny of the majority. And this is a case where a minority group, gay and lesbian couples in particular, have said, wait a minute, there's a system in place for citizens, and you're not letting us have access. And I think the court has to step back and say, if we truly are dedicated to the proposition that all people are created equal, are we living true to that creed? And in this case, the court said, no, we're not. Do I wish it had gone another way? Yeah, probably, because I would like it to be coming from the hearts of all Americans. But, you know, We just had the anniversary of the Loving v. Virginia case, where that made interracial marriage legal across the country. And some of those same states that are mentioned in the piece you just read didn't want that to happen at that point in time either. And there are probably still people there who don't want it to happen. And I don't think this case is going to be any different.
Denise Spivak, is, in your view, will there be some backlash in some states and some parts of our country?
You know, unfortunately, I think there will. I think, you know, we see the backlash quite frequently, unfortunately. I mean, just recently within the past week, there was a rainbow flag burning at the center in Anchorage, Alaska, bomb threats at other centers. It's an unfortunate reality, but any progress I think that is made is always faced before and after with challenges, and unfortunately that's a path to progress.
And the whole history of social justice, Evan, if I can jump in, if you look at whenever there's been advancements of some sort, whoever the group may be, women's rights, issues around African-American, black individuals, people with disabilities, there's always backlash. So you get some advancement, and then there's some backlash, and then a little more advancement, and there's oftentimes some backlash. So I expect to see some of that. I'm hoping, praying that it's not violence, that it's not more flag burnings. We just actually celebrated the anniversary of the largest mass killing of gay individuals. I believe it was 1973, if I'm not mistaken, in Atlanta, where a gay bar was bombed, and they had, what, like 75 people who perished that night. And it's something that most people don't know about. And I know that myself and my organization, we take security very seriously, and we have to. We have to always be vigilant to make sure that we have systems in place to keep ourselves and our clients and our patrons safe.
Do you get threats?
We do get threats occasionally. Yeah. And, you know, to their credit, the local police and law enforcement have been very good when the threats come in and doing the investigating that needs to be done.
And Scott, you are such a tremendous educator. And I'm sitting here going, 1973 Atlanta, why don't I know about this? So for those of us who want to, in our spare time this afternoon, jump on Wikipedia, jump on somewhere else, what's the event? What can we look up?
I just was reminded of it on Facebook yesterday. I saw a post. While we're talking here, I'll try to jump online and get you the name of the place. But I'm sure if you did gay bombings Atlanta 1973, you'd probably find it.
Yeah. Harry Bronson, what do you make of the concern that some have that this had to go down this way, that it was the Supreme Court, that there were still, and was it, Denise, 38 states that still have not passed equal marriage? Is that right?
Actually, it's 37 that have and 13 that have not.
I'm 13. Okay.
Right.
Okay. And so, Harry Bronson, are you concerned about a backlash?
Well, I tend to agree with Denise and Scott that unfortunately there will be a backlash. But that is very typical in a civil rights movement. And this, in some sense, is indeed a civil rights movement. The reality is that there's always this tension. Should law follow societal change, or does law facilitate societal change? And that's where, you know, Alexis de Tocqueville, who analyzed democracy back in the 1800s, said that in a democracy, majority rules, but you always have to be vigilant about the tyranny of the majority. And that especially is the case when you have a civil rights or a humanity issue. And in that situation, oftentimes the law leads societal change. And great organizations like Denise's and Scott, those organizations and their message and their education will help us to work with people in society to have them better understand the issues and fully respect and honor the loving, committed relationships that the Supreme Court has ruled is constitutionally protected.
I think that's well said. And I think to Scott's point about interracial marriage as an example, the one thing that I think as we go forward, now that this ruling is in place, states cannot ban same-sex marriage. Even if there is a backlash, I think to Scott's point, you know, for the most part, this is a country that doesn't have a problem with interracial marriage. I say for the most part, because there are some people in this country, certainly, who still do. We know that. And just based on essentially public opinion polls. We know that same-sex marriage is coming. That was coming anyway. It wasn't going to be stopped. It was going to happen one way or another. Yeah. But my concern is, once in a while now you hear people say, okay, well, can't the gay community just be quiet? You know, you got marriage. Can you just, you know, can't you just? And my concern, we can laugh about that, but here's my concern in a very serious way. Whether it's 5 years, 10 years, or 50 years from now, people will be having a conversation and they'll look back and they'll say, hey, this country's fine with same-sex couples and there is no concern. Even today, there are Americans who are flying Confederate flags. We saw Dylann Roof go into a church and say, I'm here to kill black people. You know, the notion that racism is just gone because certain things aren't as overt. I don't want to get to a place where we say, can't the gay community just stop because everything's fine?
Absolutely. And the reason I laughed at your comment is there's the famous quote from Oscar Wilde about that gay relationships was the love that dare not speak its name. And oftentimes I think of it these days as the love that screams loudly at every street corner, right? Every TV show, every video game. I mean, there are LGBT characters all over the place these days. And for folks who are opposed to inclusion, sometimes it seems like we are everywhere and to the point of annoyance. And I think sometimes that can add to some of the backlash that some individuals may have. I also believe that it's a large part of why we are sitting here having this conversation today, in that our popular culture, our media, our TV shows, our radio shows, etc., have become inclusive and have included authentic, realistic images of who lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people are. Again, and I've shared this story on this show before, as a kid, the first recollection that I have of my dad saying that somebody was gay was while we were watching the movie Psycho, and he referred to Norman Gates as one of those homosexuals. And that's when I realized that I wasn't one of them, because I had no desire to kill my mom, stuff her, and keep her in the basement. So, you know, I mean, that was the images that I got. I mean, I'm 55, so I probably got that 50 years ago. And that was the way the discussion was.
Yeah.
So as a little, you know, 10-year-old kid who really didn't understand sex and sexuality, but knew that there was something different going on inside of me, that was an early message I got that said, nope, you're not one of them, at least.
Well, and I think that that's a good point for us to say that later in this hour, we are going to talk about what is next? What does happen? There were questions already. We've had questions online. Does this impact same-sex couples adopting in other states? Things like that. So we'll talk about that in our second half hour. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the Supreme Court's decision on same-sex marriage today. The court deciding in a 5-4 decision that states cannot ban same-sex marriage. It essentially makes it the law of the land, a 5-4 decision. And City Hall just celebrated that with a flag raising at noon here. Our guests are talking to us about the impact. Scott Fearing is the executive director of the Gay Alliance here. Denise Spivak is in town from Florida. She is the national director of membership and external affairs from Centerlink, the community of LGBT centers. And Assemblyman Harry Bronson is kind enough to take some time for us on the line right now. What I want to do is address one specific point, which is a lot of people have structured this debate as if it is just the faith community and the gay community. And that is too simplified. But at the same time, to be fair, our news director, Randy Gorman, had a chance to talk this morning with a group that has been vociferous about this. That's the group called New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms. Reverend Jason McGuire is the executive director of that group. They describe themselves as an advocacy organization representing the evangelical Christian community. And McGuire says they have problems with today's ruling. Let's listen to some of that conversation that our news director, Randy Gorman, had with Jason McGuire.
Well, you know, initially, I think we had a couple of concerns. I mean, first, we do believe that moms and dads matter. I think that today's court ruling sends a clear message to the country from the Supreme Court that either a mom or dad is optional. And you know, we really think that it's important that we recognize that each gender contributes something unique to the rearing of children. The second concern for us really becomes the issues of religious freedom. And I think that those battles are going to come to the forefront now as we're seeing conflicts here in New York, whether it's, you know, Liberty Ridge Farm, with, you know, wedding venue statuses and photographers, that kind of thing. The coming fight over religious freedom is really going to be the issue in the days to follow.
At this point, what, you know, legislatively, is there anything that groups like yours will do? Where do you see things going at this point?
Well, I think this is very similar to what has happened in the past. I mean, we saw in 1973 that the court passed a very unpopular decision known as Roe v. Wade, and that did not cause the issue to go away, either politically or even from an education perspective. In fact, it's more rampant today than ever before. And over the course of the generation since 1973, we see that America has moved more and more towards that pro-life affirming position. And I think that as the work continues on the marriage issue, we have that same hope and expectation that Americans will soon realize and recognize the importance of the marital institution between one man and one woman.
Is your position or your group's position that do you have a problem per se with same-sex marriage? Do you think states or the federal government should have the right to outlaw it?
Well, the issue before the court this time really wasn't ruling on whether or not gay marriage was a good thing or a bad thing. It was whether or not there was a constitutional right. And I think in all honesty, no one can look to the Constitution and say there is some right to marriage within the Constitution. So I do think that the Supreme Court has gone beyond where it should have gone on this particular decision.
Do you think it should be more a states' rights kind of issue, an individual state-by-state decision, if you had your choice?
Well, honestly, historically, you know, we've seen that marriage is working out pretty well between a man and a woman. Children need moms and dads. We would like that to be there. But yes, at the very least, this should go back to the states' rights, the people of those states. The court is overstepping the 50 million Americans that have already voted in many of these states concerning this issue. We just think that's wrong.
A lot of folks who have the opposite opinion would say, hey, you know, the sky's not going to fall. This has happened in other states. I mean, what do you think this will do, if anything, to society? Do you have a feeling it's going to have some kind of dramatic impact?
Well, the largest immediate impact is going to be on those religious freedom issues that we spoke of. We're going to see those fights. I mean, we've already seen a case here in New York where Liberty Ridge Farm in the Capital Region was fined $13,000 for simply refusing to allow a gay wedding to occur on their property. And so those are the fights that are going to come. And we saw what happened in Indiana and other locations. I think people that hold to an authentic and definition of marriage are going to be very vigilant on these religious freedom issues.
That is Reverend Jason McGuire, the executive director of New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms, a group that describes itself as an advocacy organization representing the evangelical Christian community. Let's hit that from a couple of points. And Scott Fearing, the executive director of the Gay Alliance, on a number of those points that he was making, go ahead and respond. And then we'll get Harry Bronson, assemblyman, to kind of talk about, again, states' rights, legal issues as well. But go ahead, Scott.
I'd be glad to leave the state rights piece to Harry. So I'll start by just quickly touching on the whole issue of you know, moms and dads versus moms and dads and dads. We certainly have seen that all sorts of family dynamics are good at raising kids and sometimes are bad at raising kids. So are there really great heterosexual parents? Yeah, absolutely. Are there really great gay and lesbian same-sex parents? Absolutely. But there's also a lot of folks who are raised by grandpa and grandma, aunt and uncle, extended families, all sorts of different dynamics. So it's not about the gender of the mother, father, mom and dad, parental guidance. It's about the family dynamics overall. The religious freedom piece is an important one to me. The important thing there is that freedom of religion is just that. There's not a church in the country that I think will be forced by court order or otherwise to complete a wedding ceremony. The farm thing that the speaker brought up in the interview really was a private business. Private businesses have to equally welcome all citizens. But if there's a church that doesn't want to perform a same-sex marriage, first off, I wouldn't want to go there. And second, they have the right to say, I'm sorry, that doesn't fit within our scriptural ideals, our ideas of what religious freedom is all about. And they have the right to say that. So that's sort of where I fall down as an individual and as I look at these issues as we face them here in Rochester.
Now, Antonin Scalia writing his own dissent, and it is a blistering 8-page dissent. Of his own. I'm not going to read all of it, but he, Harry Bronson, Justice Scalia seems to agree with this notion that that this should have been a state's rights, that this should not have been a judicial fiat, as he says. And here is what part of the dissent written by Justice Antonin Scalia, quote, "I will write separately to call attention to this court's threat to American democracy." He goes on to say that today's decree says that my ruler and the ruler of 320 million Americans coast to coast is a majority of the 9 lawyers on the Supreme Court. Until the courts put a stop to it, public debate over same-sex marriage displayed American democracy at its best. But the court ends this debate in an opinion lacking even a thin veneer of law. And by the way, Justice Scalia then goes on to attack the tone and even the integrity of his fellow justices in what, to me, frankly, looks like a rather unprofessional piece of dissent. But on the merits alone, he says states' rights. This was a good debate. It was a healthy debate. And now the debate is gone. Harry Bronson, what do you say to that?
Well, I say a couple of things. Excuse me. Here in New York State, the religious freedom issue was hotly debated. And our marriage equality bills, there's actually two of them, that constitutes the Marriage Equality Act, they, in that language, and one of the ways we were able to get Senate Republicans to ultimately vote for and approve marriage equality here in New York State was because we addressed the religious freedom issue. There is a balancing act here because what we have are two liberties under the Constitution, both New York State Constitution and the United States Constitution, that are coming face to face with each other. And how do you deal with them? Scott's lay response to this is exactly how the attorneys are responding and exactly how the majority responded. And that is that when you put those two liberties face to face, the idea that all people are created equally and have the same rights and responsibilities as every other citizen, that one will trump the religious freedom when it comes to public accommodation. So in situations where whether or not a photographer has to take pictures at a gay wedding, or whether or not a pastry shop has to bake a wedding cake, those are public accommodations. And because of the interplay of the Interstate Commerce Clause and other clauses in the Constitution, it says that if you're going to be offering a service to the public, you have to do it in a non-discriminatory way. That's very different than the requirement that a particular faith provide ceremony to solemnize the wedding service. So we made that distinction in New York State. That distinction is in varying degrees being made from one state to the next. Ultimately, I think that issue will be determined by the Supreme Court, too. But in issues of full democracy, because of the way our Constitution is written, I don't think that you can delegate those decisions to states to determine on a piecemeal basis. Because if you do, then you're going to end up with separate determinations and a individual constitutionally required right would be decided based on where you live and what your zip code and what state you live in. And that's not how we're set up as a democracy.
Scott Fearing, real briefly here, just to circle back, if you want to check out the historical moment that we talked about, was it 1973?
It was indeed 1973, and I'm just pulling it back up here. It was something called the Upstairs Lounge, and I was wrong. It was actually in the French Quarter in New Orleans.
New Orleans.
And it was June 24th, 1973. 32 people died as a result of fire and smoke inhalation. No one was ever convicted, no cause of arrest. There's the possibility one of the suspects was actually a gay man who had been kicked out of the bar earlier in the day. But ultimately, this is a case where the most of the news outlets ignored the story, mentions of the incident in the editorials and talk radio made light of the tragedy, mocking the victims and their sexual orientation. And so it is one of those things that sort of has disappeared into history, where 32 people were killed in a fire bombing.
We're going to get a short break in. I've monopolized a lot of time of the Assemblyman Harry Bronson, who's been on the line with us, and I have no idea if you're able to stay. Can you hang in for about another 15, 20 minutes, Harry? You got to hit the road. It's fine either way.
No, I'm enjoying my time at the service station talking to you.
Harry Brunson is, I think he actually pulled over on the thruway to stop and talk. He's not talking and driving, and that's very kind of him. So he's on the line with us. Scott Fearing, the executive director of the Gay Alliance, and Denise Spivak, who is the national director of membership and external affairs for Centerlink, the community of LGBT centers. Your phone calls, and the phones are lit up. We go to the phones right after this short break on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, it's Innovation Friday on Connections. We're going to talk about what spatial thinking is, what it means, how it relates to handling disasters or foretelling disasters, how to prevent the next Ebola crisis or respond more effectively to a flood or a snowstorm. Spatial thinking, crisis mapping, and thinking more effectively. It's next hour on Connections.
Clemente Pinckney led one of the nation's historic black churches.
Mother Emanuel, since 1818, has stood for freedom and worship for African Americans in South Carolina. And so it's an humbling privilege I have to serve as his pastor.
Mourners, including President Obama, gather at his funeral. Later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That'll be this afternoon at 4 on this, your NPR News station.
Welcome back to Connections. We're talking about the U.S. Supreme Court's decision on same-sex marriage that essentially makes it the law of the land. The Supreme Court deciding 5-4 that states cannot ban same-sex marriage. And our first phone call this hour is Bill in Victor. Go ahead, Bill.
Hi. So regarding the religious freedom issue, I'm from Baltimore. And when the civil rights laws went through, we kind of looked down on people who closed their businesses, many for religious reasons rather than accommodate black people. But now they actually look like people of real integrity because they said, well, this is the law, this is fairness, what the country considers to be fairness, we're going to close our business. So they actually look like people of real integrity. And the main thing I wanted to say was the whole religious freedom thing. There are 613 commandments and prohibitions in the Torah. And Jesus said, not one jot or tittle shall be changed until all things come to pass, which obviously they have not because we're still here. Jesus said that it's the highest law to heal on the Sabbath. He did not violate the Sabbath. He corrected the Pharisees. So homosexual activity is referred to as an abomination once in the Old Testament. The violation that is most often referred to as an abomination many, many times is violation of the Sabbath. Nowhere in the Old Testament does it say anything about observing the Sabbath is going to church. It means you do no work and you cause no other human or animal to work. So I submit that unless all the evangelicals stop going to Walmart on Sunday or whatever else it is that they do in violation of one of the Ten Commandments regularly every week, they should look deeply into themselves and honestly question whether this is all about sex and not about religious belief at all. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Bill. What a great comment. I apologize. I just had to laugh. I've never heard it put quite so eloquently.
Are you going to steal that for a future?
I just may. You know I do.
Let me get back to the phones then. And Gregory in the city of Rochester is next. Go ahead, Gregory.
Hey, Evan. It's Greg Gerard here.
Hey, Greg. Just
wanted to call in and join the celebration today. And I wanted to comment on the discussion points about, will the LGBT community, become silent now? And will also the kind of the concept of will there be a backlash? I just wanted to say, in my experience, I know there are still going to be kids sitting out there in church pews or religious schools like I was at McQuaid, and they're going to still be questioning things about themselves. And while today's celebration and victory is such a wonderful positive message to share, there will also be some negative messages out there, like Scott's, what he heard his father's comment about psycho. Those things are still going to be made in the locker rooms and in the hallways and in religious classes. So I just wanted to say that I'm still going to keep writing, and I'm guessing you're going to keep having shows like this. So I think that the voices will continue and will be needed, but onward and upward. And such a different place today that we are at from where we were, when I was a kid in the 80s.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited about what's happening.
The caller is Greg Girard. He's a local author and has taught writing workshops and done a number of things through Writers and Books and some others. And he was on this program talking about your book. And the name of your book in this regard about your own experiences, Greg, is what?
In Jupiter's Shadow was my book. Thanks for the shameless plug.
And there's nothing shameless. There's nothing shameless about it. We talked about it on this program. But thank you, Greg, and some reaction from our panel. Scott Fearing first.
Well, I can only agree with what he's saying. And again, our local organization here on the ground, people oftentimes, you know, look at local LGBT groups and say, you know, what is it you do? You have no work left to do. The reality is some of the groups in Albany and in D.C. and places that have been so focused on the legislative work, some of their work is actually finishing up. But in many ways, our work is becoming more important than ever. You know, the Gay Alliance has 43 years in town here. We are very proud to be of Rochester, for Rochester. You know, we raise money and spend money here in town helping our neighbors, helping our families, helping our neighborhoods, our schools, and our workplaces be better, safer, more inclusive places. And yes, that work is going to have to continue.
Harry Bronson, Assemblyman Bronson, is on the line with us. Legislatively, is there anything on the state agenda now that you want to make sure goes forward? Because again, this is a moment where you will hear people say, hey, it's over, it's done. Mm-hmm. Harry Bronson, on the state level, what's out there?
Certainly, there is still a lot of work to be done, and we're attempting to do that at the state level. Unfortunately, we just closed down session this morning around 12:30, and there were several items that were left open by the New York State Senate. We had passed the Gender Identity and Expression Non-Discrimination Act for the eighth time in the New York State Assembly, and unfortunately, the Senate didn't pass it. We passed also, I think, for the second or third time, a ban on conversion therapy where gay, lesbian, bisexual, trans individuals would go to a therapist, and if they identified their sexual orientation differently than their gender, there would be an attempt to convert their attitude or their perspective and their orientation. And because this is an orientation, that we feel that type of therapy is harmful for our young people in the gay and lesbian and bisexual community. So those are two measures that didn't pass the Senate. I am happy to say that one of my bills passed both the Senate and the Assembly this year. It will be delivered to the governor in a short time frame. And what that does is it offers protection for trans individuals when they're trying to apply for a name change that would make their name consistent with their gender identity. And it has to do with protecting their privacy, protecting their safety and things of that nature. And we're hopeful that the governor will pass that into law.
And Denise?
Yeah, and you know, I'm glad the Assemblyman brought up the legislation that he did. And I think it's important to note that on a national scale and in other states as well, there is legislation around conversion therapy. There's also legislation being proposed around abuse in conversion therapy facilities directed towards youth. And I think, you know, we don't want to throw a wet blanket on today's celebration. Obviously, this is a momentous day, but there is still so much work to do. And Scott and community centers around the nation, national, regional organizations, are still contending, you know, with issues of employment protection. We have seniors going back into the closet because they're fearful of coming out as they go seek assisted living. There's youth who are homeless because they've been kicked out of their house once they come out. There is still so much work to be done, and this is great, and this is a great advancement for the LGBT movement and for citizens of our United States as a whole. But I think we still have to be very mindful that this does not solve everything, and there's still a lot of work to be done.
And before I go back to the phones, Amanda writes to the program and says, what about adoption? Does today's ruling mean all same-sex couples can adopt?
I don't think the ruling affects adoption rights in any way, shape, or form. So that's still another battle, and especially in some states, New York is pretty good about same-gender adoptions. But I know there are a number of states that aren't, and I'm quite certain that this wouldn't impact it at all. But Harry, can you address that as a lawyer?
I think that's correct. I think there may be some points that can be pulled out of the decision
And, you know, frankly, I've not read all, 173 pages or something like that.
Oh, what have you been doing, napping? It's been 2.5 hours.
That's right.
So I haven't read everything, but, you know, there might be a phrase here or there that can be pulled out, especially in the parts that discuss, you know, the idea of same-gender couples having children and the importance of that. So there might be some language that, you know, an attorney might pull out here or there just on the broad brush principle ideas, but the determination itself does not rule one way or the other regarding adoption.
Jenna in Pittsford is next. Go ahead, Jenna.
Evan, I hope I have two main points on this, but I hope you can be patient just for a minute.
Sure.
My family's fairly diverse. As you know, through our conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the momentous part of this decision, the momentous part of this decision for me is that family members that I have, similar to the Lovely versus Virginia decision, is that if they're married in New York State, they can move to Crazy Town and their marriage is still decided. It's recognized. It's not banned. It's not as if it doesn't exist. And heterosexuals never had to face that. They never had to face the fact that their marriage wasn't recognized by somebody. And for me, it's not about states' rights. It's about states can't ban something that's just real. And my sister-in-law, who married a gentleman from Somalia, her marriage would not have been recognized a short 50 years ago. We're not talking about hundreds of years ago.
Right.
We're talking about a short window of time. And America has a short memory, and it's getting smaller in this Twitterverse that we live in. My son, who attends a middle school in Pittsburgh, participates in the LGBT club, and he's straight, heterosexual, but his thing is everyone should be equal and safe and have a club to belong to, and I'm going to help these kids. And I'm proud of him for that. But with respect to religious freedom, I have two quick points. One is my husband has a certificate from an online church and performs marriages all the time for couples. He's doing one in September for a friend who's divorced, and her church won't marry her and her fiancé. Well, if his credentials are recognized and legal in New York State, why wouldn't my homosexual friend's marriage be recognized in some state in our union? Seriously? And finally, my brother, who just retired from the United States Army, West Point graduate, was serving overseas for years and met his wife while he was serving in Korea on the DMZ. And while he was over there, his wife is from the Philippines. And in their culture, you have to be married before you can take her back. And by the way, post 9/11, it took 18 months to get her in and get her immigration status settled. But at any rate, she wanted a Catholic wedding. And the Catholic Church, the Diocese of Rochester, said, sorry, you already have been married. You can't have a big church wedding. We don't do that. We'll bless it, but we won't marry you. And when I called the diocese, they said, well, if you can find a church in Rochester who will do it, we'll look the other way. So this whole religious freedom argument is such a bunch of hooey, it makes me crazy. Sorry.
That's okay. Jenna, thank you. Jenna is...
It's love. It's the love is what marriage should be all about, not all this other nonsense. And I'm happy that it's sort of stepped up.
Thank you, Jenna. And no surprise, by the way, that Jenna's son is participating in LGBT clubs, which I didn't even know exist. I'm not surprised they exist. Yeah. It's neat.
They're interesting. I want to put a little clarification because it sounds confusing to people. They're like, what do you mean a club for them?
It's indoctrination, isn't it?
Darn, you saw through the...
You did have an agenda. I knew it.
They're generally called a gay-straight alliance, GSAs, is sort of generically how they're referred to. And most cases, and most of the school, especially high schools, but many of the middle schools in the area all have GSAs. Their primary goal is to engage in conversations, to make the schools a safe place not only for LGBT-identified youth, but people who have two moms or two dads, staff and faculty who are gay or lesbian, and they mostly work just as a general social justice sort of organization and do some amazing work in the area.
Well, Jenna's been a somewhat regular caller of this program, and I've gotten to know her, and she's a tremendously loving mom, and no surprise that the kids are being raised to be loving individuals. And so, but let me kind of pivot a little bit here to a strange part of what's happened today. And I say strange because it's been a whirlwind day. We're trying to read all of the points. As Harry Bronson said, he has been the Assemblyman just hasn't had the, you know, the care to actually read all of the decision. But I will say this, Assemblyman Bronson, I have been reading. I've read more of the dissent than I have of Justice Kennedy's majority decision. I opened this hour with the majority decision and the final two paragraphs from Justice Kennedy that have frankly evoked tears in many people around the country today. But here's Justice Clarence Thomas with a, I think, a strange commentary about dignity. And I want to read this, and I want our panel to respond, because, again, this is a member of the Supreme Court who was one of the four dissenting votes, and he wrote his own dissent. And he writes in his dissent, quote, "Since well before 1787, liberty has been understood as freedom from government action, not entitlement to government benefits. Working from that principle, Thomas says, that the petitioners in this case have in no way been deprived of their liberty. They've been able to travel freely around the country, making their homes where they please, far from being incarcerated or physically restrained. Petitioners have been left alone to order their lives as they see fit." And then Justice Thomas takes the argument even further. He says, "Human dignity has long been understood in this country to be innate. Government cannot take it. The corollary of that principle is that human dignity is not taken away by government action. Slaves did not lose their dignity any more than they lost their humanity because the government allowed them to be enslaved. Those held in internment camps did not lose their dignity because the government confined them. And those denied governmental benefits certainly do not lose their dignity because the government denies them those benefits. The government cannot bestow dignity, and it cannot take it away." In internment and slavery, invoking, that's end quote from Justice Clarence Thomas. Harry Bronson, Assemblyman Bronson, let me start with you. You know, that's a Supreme Court justice comparing what's going on to those things and saying it's, you can't have dignity taken away. What do you say?
Well, let me first say there are many times in history where Supreme Court justices have been totally wrong. And other Supreme Court justices with later decisions have told them they have been totally wrong. You know, you're getting into very philosophical questions in some of the dissent, their phrases and things of that nature. Certainly, I respect the idea that one's own sense of identity, sense of dignity, sense of being comes from within. I fully embrace that concept. What I don't embrace is the concept that somehow the behavior of state and government can't have an impact directly or indirectly on how an individual can develop their own sense of self. The idea that somehow because gay people are allowed to live where they want, move where they want, really is asking the wrong question. Before the civil rights movement was successful, black people, people of color, had the right to move where they want and live where they want, except for some other citizens didn't allow them to live in certain neighborhoods, and the societal pressures didn't allow them to be in certain neighborhoods, have certain types of jobs, and things of that nature. We have the same issue of separation here with gay marriage. If we force couples to live with civil unions or force them to have a different piece of paper that says who they are as a couple, all of that creates a separation. And in that separation is what is prevented by the Constitution, because that is the denial of freedom. That is the denial of liberty.
Yeah, I would just say, if we are going to have a society where the government is going to give some benefits to some people, but not all, I would like a good justification for the why not all. And if you don't have a good justification for why not all, the justice, who is, I'm sure, a smarter man than me, he reduces the notion of liberty or government injury to simple incarceration. It's so reductive, as if the government couldn't possibly inhibit someone's freedom or life if it didn't physically restrain you. So I found that strange, but that was one of the dissents. And let's wrap with this. I'll give the last word to our guest from out of town. Denise Spivak is here from Florida. And again, if you're just joining us, Denise has been in town here, not because she lives here, but because she's doing a bit of a scouting trip on behalf of CenterLink, the community of LGBT centers. Some final thoughts as we move forward now on what's happened today and what happens now.
Well, again, great day of celebration. I think this is really a monumental day for our country. I hope that from this point on, we take that momentum that was behind the marriage movement, and we move it towards the rest of the work that needs to be done. And I hope that there's equal support for all of that.
Thanks for being here. Nice to have you in town today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you're welcome to come back anytime. Scott Fearing with the Gay Alliance. Always nice to see you. You know, what a day, huh?
Yeah, likewise, Evan. Lovely to see you. Thank you for having me on, and it is a wonderful day.
I'm allowed to congratulate you on
that. Absolutely.
It's not like it's like just your day. It's Scott Fearing Day. Congratulations.
and congratulations to you.
Well, there. How about that? It's Evan Dawson Day, too. It's all of our day.
Everybody's.
Harry Bronson, Assemblyman Bronson, literally pulled off to a service center and took the time for this program. It has been a busy session legislatively, a busy day. Thank you, Harry. Nice to talk to you, and we'll see you again soon.
Thank you, Evan. Proud to be an American today.
You got it. Short break and Innovation Friday is next.